Yes, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jack Farmer, and I'm coming to you live from the world-famous Elite of the Week studios, and have we got a show for you. We've got golf clubs, we've got kitchens, and we've got a main event with all of the fixins. But before we get into all the flim-flam shenanigans and hijinks, allow me to introduce my partner. He's a man that always likes to remind me that with great power in ranking these wrestlers comes great responsibility. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for Flobo Boyce. Flobo, how you doing today?
I'm doing cool. There's a bit of a draft in my apartment, so I am drinking some lemon tea to keep warm by the fireside heat. That is dynamite.
Man, so something we like to do with this show is I always like to introduce you referencing some kind of comic book character. And I always think it'd be fun to have you try to guess who I am referencing. So today I said, you remind me that with the great power of ranking these wrestlers comes great responsibility. I want you to figure out who it is. Before we dive into that, I want everyone else in the chat watching along or listening along on the audio version, you got to figure out who I'm referencing. Now, that one's kind of a layup, but I want everyone to think about that. If you know who it is in the chat, with the great power of ranking these wrestlers comes great responsibility, let us know in the chat. Flobo, before you answer that, though, let me know. We had a pretty crazy show today. What did you think of AEW Dynamite this week?
So inspired how Sammy just quit his job and walked outside there. No, it was a solid show. I mean, it's one of those things where we have the tournament happening in the backgrounds, and we also have what's going on in the main event scene with Kenta, all caps, doing his thing as well. A lot of things to pull from. I understand when it comes to wrestling shows, what to say overall we thought, but there was like a lot of moving parts that I liked and some we'll talk about.
So there's just a pandemonium was unleashed. We just like the word. We were talking about it off air. We like the word pandemonium. I wanted to try to get it in there. So much stuff. This was a tough week to rank. It was hard to really put people in an order that made sense, if I'm totally honest, but that's the job.
It never stopped you before.
It's having no rhyme or reason has never stopped me from putting things in an order. So for those of you who are new to the show, this is how it works. We're going to go through AEW Dynamite, but we're not just going to recap. We're not just going to say what happened, but we're also going to rank the wrestlers starting at the top ranked wrestler and work our way down to number 10 based on what we feel are the top 10 power ranked wrestlers. I say we with a giggle because really I frantically put it together before the show starts. And Flobo, you tell me that I was wrong.
Yeah. I should appreciate your hard work, but I don't.
So the beauty of this too is I keep track of these rankings. And so everyone who has a first place ranking gets 10 points. Everyone that has a second place ranking gets 9 points, 8 points, 7 points, 6 points down the line. I'm keeping track. And then at the end of the year, we're going to have a final power rankings with all the top for the year wrestlers. It's going to be really fun. It's going to be perfectly done. And there'll be no way to argue it, right?
Absolutely not, because you have numbers to back it up, even though they're numbers you invented.
Made up numbers are the best kind of numbers, Flobo.
Yeah, of course.
So before we get into this first ranking, the top ranked person, as I said at the top of the show, as people are sort of wandering in here, we have a new game we're playing. I always introduce you using a reference to someone from comic books. And today I said that you always remind me that someone, or I guess you always remind me that me, with great power for ranking these wrestlers comes great responsibility. You've got to guess who it is. Everyone in the chat has, you know, you guys can try to guess before Flobo does. But before we get on, who am I referencing, Flobo? Let's see if you get a point for the first. Let's see if you get a point.
It's obviously Bonesaw. I mean, that guy was so undeserved. Pick was wrong. It's Spider-Man. Let's do
Spider-Man. I mean, technically, I was thinking Uncle Ben, but...
Oh, right. Oh, that's minus 1 points. I have the same amount of points as the actual minus one.
You could be the leader of the Dark Order, I guess. I don't know why is Flobo... Heywood, why are you asking if I'm trying to sing Usher?
I have no idea.
Hey, everyone in the chat, we're going to get started. Let's get this thing going. Let's start ranking these people. Number one, this was a tough one to do, Flobo. Again, lots of craziness, lots of, I say shenanigans, but it was all over the place this week. But I think the number one person has got to be, with a bullet, Kenny Omega. I mean, he has a nice, relaxing day on the golf course, kicking it with his buddy Don Callis before the show. He got a big win. He got Lance Archer up in that one-winged angel. I can't believe that. But he also pinned the big man. And with all the craziness that's going on around him, he found a way to take two guys who are custom-made for a Falls Count Anywhere match and somehow got a win, even though his partner was someone who doesn't seem to necessarily get along with him. I feel like he was in a position of weakness but still found a way to turn it to a win, and I think that puts you in a main event number one winning spot for the night.
Well, being number one on this list means he can't be best dressed, so I'm willing to accept. I acquiesce to this one. Kenny Omega had a night for the ages. Established himself more as the world champ here on this brand. Got the pin, even though going into it, we kind of saw that coming. But doesn't deny the fact he got it done, right? He didn't get upset, didn't get rolled up, didn't get small package. So, yeah, there's not much argument there. Number one is Kenny Omega.
What really made sense to me, what really made me feel like he was the guy that deserved this, is I didn't know if he was going to win. I mean, granted, he was the champion, or he still is the champion, but his partner was a guy who wasn't too fond of him based on stuff that happened after the show last week on AEW. Someone who he didn't necessarily know he can trust. I mean, the New Japan Pro Wrestling Bullet Club is not saying friendly things about this, I guess, Bullet Club within the United States here. And it felt like maybe this was a time when things could have gone bad. I feel like right now, Kenny Omega is kind of skating on thin ice with a lot of his relationships. And even if he comes in with the best wrestling, things might work against him. And it feels like eventually it's going to. I thought it could have been tonight.
Yeah, like a wise person once said, there is no honor among thieves. Kenny Omega has a lot of tools at his disposal with Don Callis and Kenta, because frankly, nobody likes Mox either, apparently. But you're right. If you're Kenny Omega, you got to realize no matter how many alliances and how many tag team matches you are, you have the strap, which is a target. So yeah, it is a ticking time bomb. I am not sure if I would trust Kenta to be your everyday backup, but for tonight's purposes, they got the job done.
Do you think that that Kenny Omega has more backup coming at some point, or do you think he's kind of rolling with his crew now?
They should. I mean, with like all these like semi-alliances with the Good Brothers, even though right now currently Omega is on the best of terms with the Young Bucks, I'm sure they could have been a Thanos moment and get them back together. They could set aside differences. So he does have a deep roster on that level, but I kind of like the Julius Caesar vibe of him just growing just waves of discontent and having that idea of who's going to be the one to stab him in the back.
I love the Julius Caesar reference. We are an educated show. We have a lot of smart conversation on this show, but it is really good. It's a good example. And also, Haywood, just a shout out. He said, because I said, you remind me of,
you just let it hang? Half a bar, guys. Jack is like,
you got to pay me for the rest of it.
Wow. Big money, Matt. Big money, Jack.
New album dropping. Never.
For finally, Tip Top Hip Hop too.
One of these days, Tip Top Hip Hop is coming. I promise.
Don't lie to me.
It's just like the Guns N' Roses and their
promise. Chinese Democracy.
Yeah, Chinese Democracy. It's coming. It's coming. Sure. We're still working on it. By the way, it's totally off the rails. I would love to hear that album and have it referencing all these things from like '95 that don't matter anymore. Right. So like out of date and behind.
AOL CD.
I need my AOL CDs. That'd be funny. That'd be stupid. What a stupid reference. We're dumb. We're off the rails. Let's get it back on the rails.
Good night, everybody.
By falling back on my favorite thing, and that's asking people to give us a 5-star review, to hit a like button.
Wait, Jack, can I do it? Can I do it?
Yeah, cut a promo.
You know what? My buddy Jack works so dang hard to bring this show Lead the Week to you. We're talking about charts and graphs and Excel documents and Dud the Knights and Best Dress and intros that are just five stars. All he asks is just a little bit of five-star love back. If you're on that iTunes and that Spotify, if you can, five stars. Like, comment, subscribe. Tell everyone about the show. Tell them, you know, that Heel Beto guy is actually a nice dude. Do what you can to support the show and support us because, frankly, all it takes is 20 seconds and you'll make our day.
Yeah, you know, well done. I should have you do the promo from now on.
Nah, I'm good. I'm retired.
I think you do these from now on. I was never that good at them. I don't know why they keep giving them to me.
It's your show. I forget to do it on mine at all, so it's fine.
But we go on and we continue on with the show. It's hard to keep a conversation going. We both just agree on things, Flobo. But we get to number two. The number two person of the night. This one worth a big 9 points. Flobo, I'm giving this to Thunder Rosa. She cuts a mean promo before her match. She gets back on track after a loss to Britt Baker. She wins the first match of the Women's Eliminator Cup tournament. And she makes a good point. She kind of feels like someone who could actually unify the AEW and NWA Women's Championship. And maybe this would be her way to get revenge on Britt Baker. It feels like she really put in a good resume for why she should be the one to be the person to win this tournament and go on and potentially become the next AEW Women's Champion. I think she looked great all throughout this match and through this show. I put her at number two.
Don't worry, Jack. I'm pretty sure we'll disagree at some point tonight, but one and two is pretty much a lock. Thunder Rosa is someone that was good, bona fide walking into AEW, but already is at home with this roster. Can be one of the more visible, if not quote-unquote marketable talents. She had a competitive match with Layla Hirsch, someone who's already been ranked this year on the PWI Top Women's Wrestlers, but really brought a better performance out of her than I've seen the last couple times. She has a look, she has a style, she has a purpose, and she has a mission. That says a lot more than most wrestlers and most promotions. We know who she's about, what she's after, and how she's going to do it. Number two, solid in this week.
Yeah, she just, to me, and for really for a while now, and we've talked about this before, whether she represents the NWA or represents AEW, to me, it doesn't matter. She feels like the embodiment of this division in AEW right now. And she feels kind of like the backbone. I think if I was to start naming the women's wrestlers of AEW, the first one I would name is Thunder Rosa. And I think the fact that she got the first win of this tournament really is more than just symbolic. I think it means that this is going to be a big show for her.
Well, there's a lot of talk on both sides of the bracket, and I don't want to jump ahead, though. But is there any upsets you think are going to happen, or is this first round on both sides look pretty much paint by numbers here?
I don't have the brackets in front of me, but if I was to look at a potential upset, I believe Tay Conti is taking on Nyla Rose. Everyone in the chat, take a look if you'd like. You can correct me. I kind of feel like Tay Conti might get a win. I think she might get past the Native Beast. I think she's been doing good things on AEW Dark. I talked about her before as a farmer's market pick. I feel like maybe she could be the one to sort of upset things a little bit.
Fair enough. The most even matchup, of course, in that bracket was Serena Deeb and Riho. That can go either way, but you're right. I think if Tay beats Nyla, that'd be the snap moment of the night.
Yeah, it's a fascinating tournament, and it's a fascinating to see. For me, it's very interesting. I'm not going to be one of those people that pretends I'm super educated on what the New Japan Pro Wrestling or Japanese women wrestling situation is. I don't follow it very closely. I don't know a lot of the people over there. I've seen them on Twitter. I've heard buzz about some of them, but I don't know them in depth. So it'd be very interesting to see them compete and sort of learn who some of these people are and grow to love them. That's what I love about tournaments, really, is that you get to learn about new people and fall in love with them and see that they're people that, hey, maybe I'm a fan of this person forever. I don't know. It happens to me with college basketball, for instance, every year in March. That's kind of a love-hate thing for me, though. I don't know about you. But yeah, I'm interested. Do you have any upsets you think are going to happen?
I mean, that's it. I got a feeling that even though I would see in my head either Rio or Serena Deeb going forward and advancing. I do think Rio is going to get it, and I would consider that an upset. Because Serena Deeb's form, her recent run of matches have been so good and so crisp, she should have the momentum in there. And the fact that Rio is an outlier and that she's in the American side of the tournament, I mean, I guess I got to mention that part because it is kind of weird. Mm. It's kind of like a big orange flag about this, not quite a red flag about Rio being in the American bracket. But yeah, Serena Deeb pulls out a win here. I think that could be the bracket buster, if you will.
Yeah, it seems very strange that she's on the American side of things. And it feels weird that they're not really addressing it. It seems, I don't know, it seems odd to me, but it also seems to me that I think anyone beating Riho, if I'm honest, would be an upset. I think mm-hmm. she's got to be the favorite to win this because she was the first champion. She's only lost once in AEW that I can remember off the top of my head, and that was when she lost the title. So getting a win against her is going to be a big deal one way or the other. Dylan, our chief correspondent, Dylan Matthews, has said
from the we future.
Got Serena Deeb versus Riho. He knows this because he's in the future in Australia. Serena Deeb versus Riho. Conti versus Rose, so I was right. And then Britt Baker versus Anna Jay. That'll be interesting as well. That'll be interesting as well because Britt Baker and Anna Jay are technically ne'er-do-wells. So I don't know. I don't know how that's going to go.
Technically.
Technically speaking, a ne'er-do-well. Number three, Flobo. Number three is someone who was number one for quite a bit of time during the course of this show in my mind, but he lost it at one point. Darby Allin. I love the new face paint with the skeletal stuff on the chest. He has a little heart on his tights now. I thought that was kind of fun as well. But he got a great win in a great match with Joey Janela. He finally defended the title. He defended it against someone who wasn't related to Team Taz. It was a great match. He had a cool look. And like I said, I had him ranked number one throughout the show until he literally got thrown in a body bag and drugged behind the back of a car in a parking lot. I can't call you the best on the show if that happens to you, Flobo. There's just no way unless everyone has a terrible night. But that knocked him out of the number one spot, getting beat up and drugged behind a car. Otherwise, I thought he had a pretty good night.
Otherwise, roll up to Home Depot and like, yo, you got any Darby Allin size body bags? How often is this guy going to beat a bag? It's beyond me. I don't think he's number three. I understand he won his match. You guys also not a fan of Joey Janela, but when that match was announced, there was not one person who considered that any degree of difficulty based on win-loss records alone. Darby Allin has a prop. He is the TNT champion. He's a guy that we should be rooting for, the workhorse, if you will. But he's been used so sparingly that I'm starting to wonder if that's going to be detrimental. It isn't like a Brock Lesnar. It isn't like a Kenny Omega or John Moxley where you can go 4, 5, 6 weeks without seeing someone. We need to have Darby Allin week in and week out against strong competition. Who's that? Unfortunately, isn't Joey Janela. And I'm a Joey Janela guy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of agree with you. It's the problem with that I feel that I'm seeing with it also isn't that it's not just that he's not defending it, but he's showing up every week. He's just not having matches, which seems weird. Like, why are you walking out to the ring all the time? Why are you cutting all these promos, but then not defending the title? And when you have a group of guys who all want a shot at the title and they keep saying, dude, can I get a shot? Like it starts to feel a little bit like he's ducking people, Flobo. And something clicked to me today. Everyone keeps saying that they feel like they see a lot of Sting in him because I think because of the face paint and because of the dark clothes and things like that. But when he sat down in the corner today, I'll tell you who I saw. I saw Raven. I saw some Raven in Darby Allin. I don't see Sting. I see Raven. I could see him being the guy that's like, what about me? I don't want to defend this title. You don't deserve it. Blah, 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 blah. All that good stuff. I see a little bit of that. You say no. You don't like it.
I say no because I don't like it. Yes. I don't see Raven there. That's another thing you don't want. Darby Allin is someone I've been told. Because he's good in the ring. Not knocking that. The coffin drop is one of the few moves that takes my breath away week in and week out. Which is a rare feat because you watch a lot of wrestling, what we do. But there's one thing about Darby Allin that had something last year and that he was original. But as this has gone on, I'm starting to wonder if or not he just... putting himself in Sting's shadow. So the last thing I want is another 90s WCW stalwart to be compared to. Darby Allin has a very, very important role right now. He has a piece of gold, the gold that Cody Rhodes made famous, the gold that was held by the dearly departed Brody Lee. This title is young, but it has a lineage and it has a heritage. But you're not going to have that continue by having C-level matches or B-level matches against C-level competition. Not knocking Jordan Nell's skill, it's just his place on the card and having weeks between defenses. That is not how it's done. We all like Sting. We know Sting has a match in what, weeks from now? So something has to happen then to make sure we're not all off the Darby train. Because if he loses the belt, you don't want it to be a fluke, do you?
Right, yeah, I agree completely. And I think that kind of piggybacks onto the Sting thing and how they continually come out and do nothing over and over again. But yeah, it's weird. It's starting to feel like this unfulfilled promise. There is something great here. There's a lot to see. And I think there is. I don't doubt the guy. I'm just saying, like, okay, it's time. I mean, even Jungle Boy is starting to, and you know, we may talk about him a little bit, do some things, but there's like, I'm waiting for the next thing. But I will say, in my Raven analogy defense, they both sport some cutoff jean shorts. So
one of them are kind of short shorts with leggings. I mean, that's a little different. Like, you, right. If I saw Raven today, I'm like, oh man, this guy is just like you. He'd be upset. He'd be like, no, he's not. How dare you, Flobito?
Well, I guess he is kind of like Stevie Richards then, because Stevie Richards had the short shorts, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. God, I'll show you. Old. You'll see. That was his whole gimmick.
I feel so old referencing Stevie Richards. I love Stevie Richards, but we had a question in the chat, and I think it's an important one. Dylan Matthews asks, Haywood asks, which parking lot is more dangerous, AEW or NXT's? You and I actually chatted about this a little bit off air. What do you think? Who's more dangerous?
Well, I think NXT's is slightly more dangerous because it's happened for so long. They sold merchandise about it. But AEW is coming in hot and fast, man. 2021 took a turn for the worse.
Yeah, I mean, between the that parking lot brawl with Best Friends and Proud and Powerful, and of course now being dragged behind a car and Cage lawn darting some guy into the side of a truck the other week. It seems pretty bad, but I'll tell you the most dangerous thing about AEW is awkward conversations with Alex Marvez. He seems to be lurking around there, and you can't seem to get to your car without him popping over with a microphone.
It's like, what are you doing here? I don't have an office.
It's like, I haven't worked here in months. Why don't they let Alex Marvez in the building? He's always like wandering around outside of the building, but you never see him in the ring or in places where they're supposed to be. It's always,
it kind of
like,
makes sense. It's kind of like, you know, Dasha has her interviews and Alex is like, what about me, guys? Like, listen, stand over there. And if you catch someone the way to your car, maybe. You know?
I love Alex Marvez, but he's kind of like that guy on Office Space where they were like, we fired him years ago. Is he still here?
I have the microphone still.
He still has his microphone. That's my stapler. That's my microphone. Oh, man. So let's break this up a little bit. We're off. This has been just a totally off the rails episode. But we go to the best dressed part of the night. And okay. Best dressed. You're never happy with me, Flobo. You never like what I have to say. I almost gave this one to Kenny Omega, but I didn't. I decided to give it to someone else. Someone who I think was deserving. Because Kenny Omega looked sharp, as you said it, golf chic. You told me this, golf chic.
I was like, that was a joke.
No.
It was a joke.
I thought he looked.
There is no funded. Such thing as golf chic. You're just like every other dad on Sunday afternoon. That's not chic at all.
I've learned you need to embrace the way old people dress because one day we'll be the ones dressing that way.
Not me. I'm going to be 24 forever.
So I gave it to someone who really puts themselves out there, really dresses well, and really embodies what a pretty person should look like. And that's Peter Avalon with his red robe. I thought he looked fantastic out there, really setting the stage for what pretty looks like. Peter Avalon, best dressed of the night. He earned it. He deserves it. You deserve it.
Yeah, you know what? I would love to see his commercials. when I'm getting rolled up, I use my own brand, Pretty Peter Avalon tights. It's all Charles' choice. As long as it wasn't Kenny Omega, I'm okay with it.
Do you like the red robe? Are you a robe guy?
It's cool to look at. I'll always, I hate to sound like Adam K. Woods, friend of the show, but I always associate robes with boxing and Gorgeous George and Ric Flair. As much as I like Bobby Roode, he's not a robe guy. You know what I mean? As much as I love Val Venus, well, he's a towel guy. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, anyone else that wears a robe, I'm like,
There's only one way to wear a robe, and that's very lightly tied, just barely holding together. Why there's a big deep cut? That's the way you wear a
specific
robe.
Way to wear this robe, Jackie.
That's the way you wear the robe. But yeah, so Peter Avalon, you are the guy best dressed. You earned it. You worked hard for it. You deserve it. Let's move on. Let's go to the fourth person. And this is number four. It's a pick that I'm surprised has been picked as often as it has, and it's a pick that is starting to rack up a lot of points. I was actually looking at the numbers yesterday, and they're actually kind of crushing it. And it's the Good Brothers. They're controlling their narrative, all respect to EC3. They're coming on to these other shows. They're pulling the strings of the Young Bucks, getting them to do whatever they want. They even came in and took out Jake the Snake. They took out the Murder Hawk monster Lance Archer. They continue to assert their dominance. Well, I was going to rank them higher, except that they chose Wolfpack instead of Hollywood.
First of all, Wolfpack is superior. And so now I'm going to give them 7 points just because. You know what? You love the Good Brothers now because you're a huge hater, Gallows. But I don't see it. I don't see it. I'm told that these individuals are one of the best tag teams in the world. And for a while, they were. But as a Met fan, I can tell you about good old Rick Porcello, who was a 2016 AL Cy Young Award winner, but didn't do that ever since. I am waiting for something from the Good Brothers to say in 2021 they are what they do. They are the Impact Tag Team Champions, but it's a division that's essentially in shambles. There's teams, but there's no really structured of their ranking system. So they come to AEW Dynamite, they're interacting with other characters, but no doubt in my mind that their kingdom is on equal footing with AEW. So if you're in someone's house and you are a minor status, by all means, you're not even in part. You're not even on the board. I don't see why they're so high in this ranking. I don't see how high they're on this ranking so many weeks in. And of course, my big technicality, they're not signed talent, Jack.
So what? They're running amok, as our friend Evan would say. They're taking over, as our friends in Team Hollywood would say. They're doing everything you need to do to be dominant. I mean, I'm looking at these two teams on screen at the same time. One of them has the AEW championships. One of them has the Impact championships. But one of these teams stood out as the guys in control of everything. And they were the ones wearing the Impact titles. And as you know, I always say, you can't say you're the best team unless you're holding the titles, and the guys holding the titles were the Good Brothers.
Look, these individuals are fine in the ring. They're great content creators if you're into that kind of stuff. I'm not talking Choppamania 1 and 2 kind of guy. But to sit here to say that they are on this list where there's so many talents that are actually didn't make it or underneath them is an affront to everyone on this AEW roster. So if I'm anyone else who is not these guys, I will come down to Jack's house located at 134 Mansion Street in Redondo Beach and say, hey, look, these guys aren't contracted talent. They shouldn't even be on the board.
Well, you make a good point. Next. You make a good point. I mean, it's fair. That's why we have a discussion. I mean, it stands. It's not changing. But you made a good point. You argued well. This is a power ranking. The first word is power, and these guys have all the power in AEW right now. I mean, them and Kenny Omega, everything they're doing, every single move they make on the chessboard seems to work. So,
size.
Anyways, speaking of Bullet Club, number five, Kenta. Kenta was on the winning team tonight in the main event, and he had just a sick-looking jump off of the stage through Jon Moxley, through a table. one of the probably the spot of the night for me. I love that moment. But he gets a win in his first match in AEW, and he shows that, hey, John Moxley, your U.S. title may not be safe.
So let me get this straight. Kenta appears in AEW last week and attempts, and even does, sends Moxley to sleep. He gets a match 1 week later where he gets to feature the briefcase that will give him an opportunity at the IWGP United States Championship. He's in the main event of this match, does these fantastic moves and takes most of the damage, but still reestablishes himself as someone who shouldn't even be in the same conversation as Hideo Itami. And he's number 5 on your list this week? 5.
Yeah. He dropped to number 5 because from what I could see, outside of that big moment where he jumped off of the stage, he kind of disappeared into the match. This was kind of a Lance Archer, Kenny Omega, John Moxley match. Now, he won. I mean, he was smart. He didn't get too destroyed. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think if you're remembering moments besides that big moment, and it was a huge moment, it was the best moment of the match, besides that, if you take that out, there's not really a whole lot of, wow, Kenta really stuck it to him moments.
And I say this about the Good Brothers, that you disagree. I can't win with you, Jack. Kenta's great. I think when it comes down to the competition in the main event, being able to be on the winning side of it, to be able to be part of this shifting of storylines of how important it is and add a dynamic, a wrinkle to New Japan, on those entertainment beats alone, it should rank above the Good Brothers. But alas, I relent.
How are you going to say, but he's not even on the AEW roster?
He's not, but that ship has done sailed because the Good Brothers are going to win this whole thing when it's all said and done.
They actually might.
That ship is gone, man.
Like, they're doing that classic, like always coming in at like 3 or 4. And so like, they're never the first ranked, but they're always pretty high and their averages are really good right now. But all that said, I thought of something while I was watching this Flobo, and I want to know your thought.
John Moxley is
holding.
I'm working on it, okay?
John Moxley is holding the New Japan Pro Wrestling U.S. title. I'm thinking to myself, who is New Japan to say who the champion of the United States is? And then I realized I looked back at all the European champions,
yeah,
here, all the United Kingdom champions, and suddenly I felt kind of hypocritical, like.
You're probably wearing golf chic when you said it.
How dare they have a champion of us? They can't say who our champion is, yet we've had countless other countries as champions. And I was like, yeah, the European Championship. I love that title.
This should be an Asian championship.
That's it. Should places based out of certain countries be allowed to have championships based on other countries?
Now, no. I think if wrestling started today, there'd be no way they would do that for that reason. Because it's cool quirks, like Trish Adora has the Pan-African Championship, and that's pretty cool because it's all like, you know, Pan-African and all that. But yeah, if I had an American promotion, I was like, this is going to be the South American title. It's like, who the hell? Did you even go?
You know? Yeah, it'd feel weird if like now, if today the WWE came out with like the Mexican Championship or... You'd be like, what? I don't think that you can do that. But certain titles, like the European champion, maybe just because it was from a different time and I was younger, it seems okay. But yeah, then it reminded me. Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird. It was just one of those weird things. But I gotta admit, that title looks pretty cool. Their United States Championship.
Yeah, usually I'm not a fan of colored straps here, but it kind of fits the aesthetic. There's one more thing, though. I think the difference here is like the United Kingdom Championship. Like, that was created with the intent to have a promotion in this country, so that makes sense to me. But if we have – okay, I used to work for this promotion called Mach 1 Wrestling in Southern California, and they were very adamant that their heavyweight title – isn't a world championship because it doesn't get defended outside of Southern California, right? So I think that if you have a regional promotion, you can't be like, this is the world championship, this is the championship of Asia, et cetera, et cetera.
You know what my thoughts are on the whole world title thing and being defended in different countries? I don't care. It's a world title when you call it a world title. I don't care.
Damn. That's my second reference, but I'm going to call Adam Woods.
If you start a company tomorrow and it's just only defended in Birmingham, Alabama, and you want to call it the world title, cool. That's fine. All right. Good for you.
Looks like Jack works at Global Force Wrestling. All right, all fine. That's cool.
Global Championship. That's different. No, yeah. But I don't know. What are we doing? Why argue? Who cares? Call whatever you want.
Like, arguing's fun.
I don't know if anyone has the copyright on calling it a world title. Like, where are the rules? Like, where was it written that in professional wrestling, before it becomes a world title, it has to be defended all across the world? And like, what country differences matter? Like, if I defend a title in Seattle, Washington, and then in Vancouver, British Columbia, is it now a world title because I traveled a few miles?
Oh, not
across the border. Like, that's silly to me.
I gotta validate the title. No, I think it comes from the days of being able to skip regions, like from the NWA territory. So if I was in Memphis, then I went to New York, and then Florida, that constitutes a world championship, perhaps ironically. But if you don't go anywhere in your region, then it's not a world title.
What if the people come to you?
Doesn't count. It's almost like a global status of being like a passport for the champion to go wherever it needs to be to defend it. But if you don't leave town, then it's not a global championship.
So if you were some guy in the past going town to town, getting in fights, you could call yourself a world champion. But if you were king of the Colosseum in Rome and everyone and the greatest warriors of the world came to fight you and you beat them all, they'd be like, he's just some local chump.
Yeah, I mean, I would say to his face.
I don't think that's how the Colosseum works.
I would go to old Roman Forum and chisel, he's a chump. I would not tell him to his face.
Chisel it on a big piece of granite and send it
over. Yeah, trash. You know,
wow. Off topic.
Yeah.
Lance Archer, you're number six, the Murderhawk Monster. He was straight after Omega. I mean, he shook off a suitcase hit to the back. He shined. This thing felt made for him. He nearly broke the ring with that choke slam on Kenny Omega. He damn near took on the Bullet Club by himself. And Tony Schiavone said it best. Lance Archer is seemingly indestructible during this thing. Outside of that big triple team one-winged angel. I mean, he was great. I think he took a loss, but at the end of the day, man, I mean, it's hard to not say that he's not a major threat to that title right now. I mean, I'm looking at it. I think he's the Revolution guy. He's going to be the guy at Revolution that faces Kenny Omega.
Lance Archer is done. I don't believe him. I haven't for a while. I don't like his braid. I think Bianca has a better one. every time I'm supposed to be told I'm supposed to fear this murder hawk, he comes up short. And that happens once, twice, six, seven times. Now you could take this. Westing's an art, and art's open to interpretation. And yes, he took the loss, but we kind of knew going in that no other man could, and the way he did it can be up there in the destroyed category. Look, I understand he's going to be a threat because he's a big guy, and any booker or writer or promoter would love to have him circle around that main event. But when it comes down to it, there's so many times you can threaten for a title, threaten to be in the main event spotlight, and not come through till we start to lose faith. And it's not just in Lance Archer. I'm looking at Ed Kingston. I'm looking at Bray Wyatt. I'm looking at Dolph Ziggler. It happens. But you can't tell me after tonight that this company has faith that Lance Archer could be the guy in that championship picture.
So,
yes, I am, Haywood. Hair mask.
First off, totally unfair to compare anyone's hair on the planet to Bianca Belair's. That's not fair. I mean, come on. Like, who's in her tier? She's an S tier.
He'll be toe.
Unfair. If you were to compare him to like Kenny Omega hair, I feel like, okay, we can start like there, but I get it, it's a braid, but whatever. This is my thing with Lance Archer. I get what you're saying. He's been in big spots and he's come up short, but to me, he reminds me like Tank Abbott back in the old UFC days, before there were rules, before they had everything figured out, where his record, he's like 50-50. He wasn't that great, but you knew every fight he was in was going to be a slugfest. It was going to be ugly. People were going to get beat up and hurt, and that's what you tune in to see. And even if he's facing someone who you know is going to outclass him, He's always got a puncher's chance, Flobo. He always has that opportunity to hit one of those big, gnarly moves that just takes someone out completely. And that's what makes him worth tuning in for. That's what makes him exciting to see. And I think that always keeps him in the game. I think that always keeps him in the match. And I think that's why he's got to be at least ranked here on the power rankings.
I'm glad you mentioned Tank Abbott, because that is definitely an apt comparison, because the whole generation of wrestling fans know Tank Abbott from 3 Count. They know him as a guy with the heart punch that loves boy band music. And to be fair, who doesn't like boy band music? I think it's great. But what I'm saying is Lance Archer came in as a force of nature. You put him with one of the, if not the most dangerous wrestlers of all time, the most inspirational wrestlers of all time, and Jake the Snake Roberts. But over time, he is becoming a joke. I don't believe him anymore. The same reason, I know it's not a narrow comparison. I'm not sure it's not equal comparison. But the same reason you told me, hey, look, Darby Allin's going to have a match with Joey Janela. And I go, okay. You tell me Kenta is teaming up with Omega and Jon Moxley is teaming up with Lance Archer and it's not going to a draw. I knew exactly who would be the one to be on this back looking up at the lights, and that's not good for anyone.
Well, I have to disagree. I feel like you're being a little harsh on the guy. I think just because, I mean, look, there can only be one person at the top of the mountain. Just because you get to this one step away from it doesn't mean you're done, doesn't mean you're a joke. And I think the most important thing about Tank Abbott's wrestling career was that he cut the nipples out of his shirts. But what I'm trying to get at is that Tank Abbott, the UFC fighter, was dangerous. Tank Abbott, the UFC fighter, was must-see TV. And I kind of think that, I think that's what Lance Archer is, because I've never seen him have a match that didn't just look, as JR would say, bowling shoe ugly. And that's what you tune in for. I like the guy. I still think he's up there. And I think his parade is just fine, though. I would love to see him whip someone with it like Bianca Belair does. Why would that just seem silly to me? So now it's time for the part of the show that I dread every single week. I hate this part. I don't want to do it. I always feel bad. I want this show to be positive. I want it to be uplifting. I want to help find ways to highlight great wrestlers. But when you light a bunch of dynamite, sometimes you get a dud. And now it's time for the dud of the week. Flobo, today it goes to a man who put himself out there. Put himself out there. He took someone out for drinks. He paid for all the drinks. He thought he had him right where he wants him.
It's not me, is it?
Old Hangman Adam Page pulled the switcheroo on Matt Hardy, and Matt Hardy ended up buying drinks, signing some kind of contract he doesn't know about yet, and looking like quite the fool. Flobo, Matt Hardy is the dud of the week. He'd been doing so good for so long. I think he got a little too full of himself, and the Hangman, even after a few drinks, pulled the wool over his eyes. I kind of think Hangman with his drinking is a bit like Popeye with his spinach, though. I think Matt Hardy didn't realize that he was just making the Hangman stronger. Matt Hardy's the dud of the week.
No doubt in my mind. Big Money Matt got taken for a ride, but that's all right. He'll get it back next week, because nobody wants to be a dud twice in a row. Yeah.
You know, I was about to give it to the Dark Order, just so you know, because they also kind of got stood up and they got, you know, I mean, it sucks when you get dumped and then you see that your significant other is going out with someone else. That stings. But I just didn't know how to put the entire Dark Order in here as it does in the week.
So, happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. So for the sake of my brackets, I had to give it to Matt Hardy instead. But yeah, Matt Hardy took a hard L this time.
Absolutely.
Number 7. A gentleman who wasn't technically a part of the roster until today, and I'm giving it to Lee Johnson. He showed up, and he got his first AEW win after a year of losses. He finally got a win, of course, with the help of the boss man, Cody Rhodes, but it was Lee Johnson who got the pin, and he cut a nice promo that I thought made him sound great. He put tons of work in. He got a big win this week. He's now officially a part of the AEW roster. Said thanks to everybody except QT Marshall, who seemed none too happy about it. If you were watching with the eagle eyes like old Jack C. Farmer here, Lee Johnson, Number seven.
And it's funny you said eagle eyes, but the C in Jaxie Farmer means cobra. But yes, I was a little bit, I was kind of interested to see whether or not he will make the list or be a farmer's market pick, might even be eligible. But I'm glad the extra points for Lee Johnson here. It was a fantastic match, and Delvey looked like, don't want to say polished, because no one's really polished in their first win, right? Yeah, go to the strap. But it felt like he was there and came to play, and it was a perfect story. And you're right. I do think the QT Marshall side, I will lead to something, because there's always that trainer versus student. Student thinks he's too big for his britches angle. They can always pull up. So yeah, Lee Johnson on Black History Month. Give him all the points.
Well, three things stood out also I want to add in. One, he got a win over an industry veteran over Peter Avalon. That's not nothing. I mean, that's a big deal. Two, I thought his offense, like his flurries of offense were actually really good. I think that there was a lot of great stuff in there. He had a cool fisherman's bat and like neck breaker kind of thing that I thought was really cool as well. And I think that one of the things that's so great about pro wrestling and something that, you know, to NXT's credit, they've done so well for so many years is it's fun to find a new wrestler and watch them grow and watch them go on their career from going from being the unknown to being the person fighting for a seat at the table to getting that contract and then going on to big things. And so as a fan, Lee Johnson is one of those guys that's just been fun to watch. And as someone who watches AEW Dark and has seen him grow there for a long time and do things there for a long time and to now get here, it's very satisfying as a wrestling fan to get to see that. So shout out Lee Johnson. Very happy for him. Number eight. You ready for it? This is a big one. This is a big one.
3 points on the line.
Sammy Guevara called out MJF. He stuck to his guns. And when he said, if I had one more problem with this guy, I'm leaving, he did it. Flobo, so many people make ultimatums and then never follow through. Well, he did. He said, I'm done. I'm leaving the Inner Circle, the group that kind of made Sammy Guevara. He's standing on his own. That was amazing. But the best part, the thing that really stood out, not only did he catch MJF trying to record him, but then he punched him so hard in the ribs, he broke MJF's ribs. I can't believe Sammy Guevara has that kind of heat in those knuckles. Broke MJF's ribs in one shot.
Sammy Guevara did the Lord's work and tried to temporarily shut up MJF, and yes, walked away from the Inner Circle, even though he's kind of walking away from a broken and withered Inner Circle, maybe a couple months too late. But this is what I'm talking about, Jack, and this list of yours. That makes a lot more sense to me than the Good Brothers being on this list. It should be a lot higher. So yes, I do think Sammy Guevara should be on this list, but at number eight, how dare you?
Well, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked about that and mentioned that, because here's the reason he's not higher on the list. He's walking away from the Inner Circle. He's walking away from a guaranteed thing. When you're a part of the Inner Circle, you're getting TV time. You're going to be on Dynamite. But now that he's on his own, does he have all the talent in the world? Yes. Does he have everything you want to see in a star on AEW Dynamite? Yes. Could he be everything we need? And could this blow his career to the moon? Absolutely. But what could also happen? He could disappear. He could drift away. He walked out into the parking lot today. That could be the last we ever see of him. Who knows? When you don't have that star power of Jericho next to you, you might not have star power anymore. So it's a big risk that we're going to have to see if it pays off. And as you said, him leaving right now with all the cracks in the Inner Circle, it is kind of like a rat leaving a sinking ship, right? So is it higher than guys at the Good Brothers who are dominating the industry right now? No. But I think it was a very powerful move, and I'm proud of him.
Fine. Sounds like you've been reading the Nitro book. You've convinced me.
Yeah, well, they do have a very specific chapter in the Nitro book on Sammy Guevara leaving the Inner Circle. That is just fascinating.
I bet they do.
If you ever read the book, you'll love it. It's very good. So we get to number nine. We talked about him a little bit. Hangman Adam Page playing hard to get, and it's working. He switched the contract. But you know what my favorite part of the Hangman Adam Page bit tonight was? He did the smart thing. Flobo, if you're ever in a situation of negotiation, ever, and someone says, hey, let me buy you drinks, let me buy you dinner, even if you have no intention of working with the people, get the free dinner, get the free drinks. I'll tell you what, Flobo, I sat across from a heated enemy at one point because they were trying to lure me to a dark side. And I said, sure, I'll let you buy me dinner. And I sat across.
Was it a fancy place? Or was it like Islands? Because if not, you lost that deal.
It was a kind of hipstery place.
Fair enough. Well played.
Yep. And I sat across from them and I enjoyed a dinner and I enjoyed some drinks. And then I said, no, thank you. And I left.
Wow. Boss move, man.
So that's what Hangman did. It was a fantastic move. I think it was really well done. I think we think of him as a drunkard cowboy who just wears buttless chaps, but he's so much more than that. He's a smart fellow with a great jacket.
I think of nothing but buttless chaps when I see Adam Page. But yeah, we know what? I thought that he would have been higher on this list as well, but I know that everyone can fit in there because of Jack's love affair with guys not on the roster. So yeah, I do think Adam Page deserves some points. Even though he didn't have a match or a big moment, but that moment we got instead totally shows his cunning, his craftiness.
It does get dicey when you don't have a match. That's why it's harder to move you up. If you don't have a match, it does... It's very difficult to get – you have to do something big. So, like, last week, Kenta didn't have a match, but, I mean, he was invading from another company. That's a big deal. So that moves you up. That's the difference. That's why he's not up higher.
I like how you tell me these rules that are going to change next week anyway, so thanks.
Just when you think you know all the rules, I change.
Exactly.
So number 10, I think you're going to like this one, Flo, but we're going to agree on this one. Damn. I'm giving it to Joey Janela. He doesn't get the credit he deserves. He's a solid opponent no matter who he faces, and no matter what the odds, he's fun to watch. He had a fantastic counter, the rebound coffin drop into a German suplex. He gave Darby Allin the fight of his life. I thought he did a fantastic job. I want to see more of him. Flobo, he took a loss, but every time I see him win, lose, or draw, even when he is an incredible underdog, I'm still into his matches. They're still great. I think he's easily a 10, even though he lost early in the night.
I bless your heart for giving him a point because I know he's going to have a lot more duds this whole year. So thank you for balancing everything out. Joey Janela, you get 1 point. Fantastic.
He's your guy. That's all you're going to say? You're not going to rant, rave, and just gush over this fella?
No, and here's the reason why. Because I can separate my personal preferences. I can separate when I say this guy knows he has a nice eye for the business. He can work with different types. I can say he can work with any different partner to put him with, any kind of mat style, a person that can work TV on Wednesday and still support smaller independent promotions back before the pandemic on weekends. Someone that has a gimmick that knows exactly who they are, who is themselves, turn all the way up. And I can tell you he won't get the credit he deserves. But the difference is after a year, AEW has beaten to my head, reprogrammed me to tell me that Joey Janela's pedestrian. So I'll take my 1 point, and I'll nibble it with two hands like a squirrel with an acorn. But I can tell you one thing. I know it's fleeting. So right now, I'm digging it, but I know it's short-lived.
All I'm talking about is tonight, Flobo. I'm not talking about a year's worth of stuff. I'm not talking about the baggage. I'm talking about what they did tonight. I think he did some great things. I think we're going to see more of him. I liked it.
More?
I thought it was good. I'm trying to extend an olive branch here, Flobo. I'm trying to get us to agree on something. That's all I'm trying to do here.
Yeah, I don't like your olive branches, though. They're always like the withered ones. The ones that already fell on the ground.
All the olives are gone.
Yeah, you want it?
You want this? So this is one of my favorite parts of the night before we wrap up. It's Farmer's Market. That's right. I, Jack Farmer, treat wrestlers like stocks. That's why it's a market. It's like Farmer's Market where you get food, but it's also like stock market. But my name is Farmer. It's an incredible play on words. Probably some of the most well done wordplay you're ever going to find.
Do you make the word play and then stop the show to say how good it was? Guys, the only one that you know, that's pretty fun, right?
I just want everyone.
Mike Dunn.
Everyone who's listening on audio and can't see the visual here, I want you to also know it's good wordplay.
Oh, okay, of course.
It has nothing to do with the visual, but I want you to know it's important. So anyways, this is where I try to take someone who I think that you could, if this was a stock, right now they're low, but very soon they're going to be high. Maybe not very soon, but their stock is going to go up. Now is when you want to invest in them. Much like Lee Johnson, now is when you want to start saying, it's time to invest. Now, I haven't picked Lee Johnson because Lee Johnson's been around for a bit. Lee Johnson's been doing a lot of stuff. He was working with MJF for a while. He's been on Dark. He's been on Dynamite. So I don't pick him because I feel like it's a little unfair at this point. This person has been on Dynamite a bit. This person has been flirting with being someone who I think we're going to see a lot. And today, I think she proved that she's going to be a building block of the women's division, legit Layla Hirsch. This is probably the last chance I have to put her in this spot because I think she's going to start blowing up very soon. I actually had someone else picked, but after her performance tonight, I was like, I can't miss this opportunity. I got to pick her for Farmer's Market before the stock goes through the roof. This is one of those ding, 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 buy now, legit Layla Hirsch. She is going to start doing big things. She obviously isn't going to win this tournament, so she's not going to be the next challenger for the title. But I think this time next year, she's going to be one of the cornerstones of the women's division.
To me, it's a remain position here. I wouldn't buy stock in Layla Hirsch just quite yet. Maybe a year from now, I probably would. Her strides have been fantastic, and the performance today was actually one of her best, but I really think it says a lot more about Thunder Rosa. There was something not quite there with Layla. I am not sure if it's her strikes. I am not sure if it's her character or gimmick. I'm not sure what legit means in this context, but I personally wouldn't buy. Not to say she's a bad wrestler. Please don't flame me in the chats. I'm not saying she's not great. She's fantastic. But I would not put my money in that. I would not invest.
She is the embodiment, I believe, of fundamentals. And so you're right. She's not going to hit some 360 shooting star Phoenix press off the top rope or whatever. But she's going to hit you with arm. She's going to get you in arm bars. She's going to throw you down. She's going to beat you up. She's going to muscle you around. And I think that it's not necessarily pretty wrestling, but it's well executed. I think she does a great job. And I think that that's what she's going to hold on to in a division that has a lot of people like a Riho who's going to be flying all over. I think you're going to have people like Sheeta who are striking. I think you're going to have people who like Britt Baker who use everything else around her to help get her wins, like a Reva or Rebel. I think that's where Hirsch is going to really step in and be like, look, I'm the fundamentalist. I'm the person that's going to use basic wrestling moves and beat you with wrestling, not all the other stuff. The W in AEW still stands for wrestling, people. And that's what I think she's going to do, and I think she's going to be great. Again, I don't think she's going to be the champion at Revolution. I don't think it's going to happen by this summer, but I think this time next year, we're going to be looking at her as like someone that they kind of build around.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like if there was the structure was there beforehand, if AEW's women's division was a little bit stronger, then yes, that could be a cog in this wheel. But AEW's women's division is come a long way since its start, but it does seem now, especially with the Eliminator Tournament, they're looking to reestablish the look and feel of what this stands for. Exciting, high-level characters from all across the world. And a fundamentalist will always be the first kind overlooked. You can go back to the days of Oney Lorcan to Steve Blackman. Those are the kind of characters that kind of get tossed by the wayside. There is an outlier here in Shayna Baszler, but for two reasons. One, her look is really specific. And two, they call this a mission magician. Like, that's, they actually add another character layer to that. So I agree with you. Everything you said is okay. I'm not bashing Layla Hirsch. I think she is probably ahead of her time to what that division needs right now to grow.
You know, I disagree. I think you can look at people who are fundamentalists and I say Bret Hart. I look at someone like Daniel Bryan more recently. I think those are the kind of people she's in the vein of, and I think that those are the kind of people that I'm reminded of. But again, she's a little bit more of a bruiser. I think she's a little bit more of a I get a lot of UFC vibes from her, so
right, but to be fair, Daniel Bryan had the yes move. Bret Hart yes. gave away sunglasses to kids on his way to the ring. Like, she doesn't have those. She doesn't have that
coolest
yet.
Sunglasses. Oh my God, I wanted. You know how I wanted those sunglasses so bad. I would have killed someone for those sunglasses. I loved it. And that jacket. Oh my God, I know what I'm going to be for Halloween.
Stop trolling me, bro. Stop.
No, I loved them. I'm not even joking. When I was a kid, I loved them. I thought they were so cool. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. I wanted to be the kid who got the sunglasses every time, but it wasn't meant to be. Anyways, what was meant to be is us signing off, Flobo. It's time for us to go. You stayed your hour. Let the world know where they can find you online.
Before we do that,
who did I miss? Who's someone that you feel like deserves to be on the show? Or deserves to be on the rankings.
Your placements are pretty much solid, but Lee Johnson would have been a little bit higher in my case. The Good Brothers and Kenta should not be on this list, but now that they are, I can't be mad at Kenta's position, but I still don't think the Good Brothers are in the same conversation as anyone else. And you know what? No one says enough, but Excalibur put in the extra work this week. He needs a category. He doesn't get the respect he deserves.
Okay, one, first off, Kenta and Good Brothers, do you believe that they didn't do enough, or just because they aren't AEW, they should just be a flat off, never on the list?
I think it'd be on the list, but how can they accrue points if they're not talent? You can't have lead of the week when people are not even signed.
You're like on the show. You count.
So, okay, if we did a WWE version, can Bad Bunny get points?
Yeah, why not? What was that kid's name who became tag team champions with Braun Strowman?
Nicholas.
Nicholas is in the history books.
It's true.
He's not a signed wrestler.
I died when Cole was like, he had to vacate because of school. Like, oh, man.
So that counts. But, okay. Secondly, what did Excalibur do that deserves credit? No,
just giving him his flowers.
I don't need to sound like a hater.
No, I know you're a hater. I know you're a hater.
I like Excalibur.
You hate guys in masks. You think Rey Mysterio is a heel because he kind of is. But, you know, I'm just giving him flowers. Being able to
Spider-Man.
Yeah, give him Spider-Man. Just being able to work dynamic stuff so to switch what he can do in the commentary booth with Callis there sometimes, and even when Taz is there sometimes, even though that wasn't an issue that much this week. But, I think he had a good performance this week. You know?
That's a good point, and I think you're right. We should give Excalibur more credit because he does have to do a bit of verbal gymnastics to match and fit in with different personalities that are big personalities to be able to work with, a Taz versus a JR versus a Tony versus Don Callis versus on Dark when Ricky Starks shows up or Negative One shows up. He actually has to make things work with a lot of people, and that's very difficult. Plus, he knows what a Cazadora is, which is cool.
I guess.
So, anyways, now, where can the world find you?
Oh, yeah. At Flippable Boys on social media. Now, listen. Jack and I argue all the time on Wednesday nights and on Thursday afternoons in a show called Draped in Gold, where we cover the other side of the Wednesday Night War, NXT and NXT UK. The Everything Tournament featuring WWE's The Bump, Evan Mack, and Heidi Mack is after that on Thursday afternoons. But if you want to check out what I'm doing online, hit me up at flobito.com. That's FLOBITO.com.
And, of course, you can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. You can check me out on the Everything Tournament with Flobo, Evan, and Heidi as well, where we're talking about all the different badasses this time, who the biggest badass of all is. Make sure to tune in on Thursdays to find that out. Also, I'm the host of the United Wrestling Network's Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, which you can check out on KDOC or on Fight TV streaming every Sunday. We have a bunch of great stuff going on. You definitely need to check it out. We have a lot of NWA championships. We just had Priscilla Kelly defend or challenge Thunder Rosa in a great matchup on last week's show. We've got even more stuff next week, so check that out as well. Presented as always by Car Shield. But this show is over. So as always, until next time, do your best and be yourself.